So imagine you're standing at the bottom of a huge rock face, something monumental like Yosemite's Half Dome. You're staring thousands of feet up. Now imagine climbing it in one day with no ropes. Nothing between you and death but your hands and your feet. Free climbing is a terrifying and exhilarating sport, and it takes a special kind of person to excel at it. One of, if not the best in the world, is Alex Honnold. He's broken so many records, completed so many first ascents, he's in a class all by himself. Now he's written a memoir called Alone on the Wall. Steve Paulson recently caught up with him to talk about living on the edge.
Alex, can you take me back to one of your signature climbs early on in 2008 when you climbed Moonlight Buttress in Utah Zion National Park? What kind of cliff was this that you climbed?
It's like a 1,000-foot sandstone wall. It's just a very sheer wall with a 1-inch crack that runs the length of the 1,000-foot buttress. So you just have to wedge your fingers in the crack for the whole way. And so it, you know, gets quite tiring.
So walk me through the process of how you got ready for this climb. Did you scout the cliff before you actually did the real climb?
So for Moonlight Buttress, I'd actually spent maybe 2 months beforehand climbing on a very similar style, sandstone cracks. And then I showed up in Zion and then spent 2 days by myself with 800 feet of rope rappelling down Moonlight Buttress and working on it. And then once I felt like I'd memorized all the movements and knew exactly what to do, then I rested a bit and then I soloed it.
So how did it feel to make that climb on Moonlight Buttress?
It felt pretty awesome. I mean, it was groundbreaking for me personally just because I'd never done anything that big or that hard, and it was definitely like a step forward for me. So, I mean, it was super exciting.
So you are most famous for free soloing, for climbing alone without any ropes or any other equipment, and obviously it's the most dangerous kind of climbing because if you fall, you die. What do you think about when you are climbing a really difficult wall?
No wall is difficult the whole way. And so in the easy parts, I think about anything. You know, I think about the view. I think about, you know, when I'm going to eat lunch. When I get to the harder sections, that's where I really focus. And then my mind sort of empties and I just perform.
So I have watched a lot of videos of you climbing. And I have to say, what you do is just astonishing. And there are times when you have sort of barely a fingertip in a crack, or your foot is not even on a hold. It's just like sort of pressed up against the cliff. And I guess it makes me wonder, what's the minimal amount of contact you need, either with your fingers or your toes, to be able to do this?
I mean, the very minimum is just like hanging by one finger, I suppose. But, you know, realistically, that doesn't happen very often. And that's never happened while free soloing. I mean, while free soloing, I try to maintain, you know, slightly more control.
Two fingers.
Yeah, that's double the control. No, I mean, that would be super scary if you had to just hang by two fingers without a rope. That'd be pretty hardcore.
What other climbers have said about you is that you don't respond to fear the way most people do. Even other top climbers, and even in really stressful situations, your nerves don't seem to get to you. Is that true?
I don't think that's totally true. I think that I've just been able to sort of teach myself over time, you know, how to deal with that a little bit better. No, so I definitely feel fear the same as anybody else when I think I'm actually in danger. Mm-hmm. The difference is that I think I'm able to differentiate when I'm truly in danger versus when I'm just having sort of an irrational fear response.
Now, in your book, you say that some of your closest calls to actually dying have not actually been climbing. It's other stuff, like you had a snowshoeing accident, nearly slid off a mountain.
Yeah, the snowshoeing accident is probably the only time in my life where I was like sure I was about to die.
What happened?
I just slid out of control down like several hundred feet of ice and then wound up in a bunch of rocks.
And you got pretty banged up, didn't you?
Yeah, so I came to and the rocks just completely messed up, you know, blood everywhere, my jacket's all torn apart, my gloves are torn off. I was pretty much a disaster. And I had a concussion, and so I was super confused. I was like, why am I here? What happened to me? Yeah, I mean, that was the only time in my life where I was sure that it was over.
Which is so fascinating to hear, because anyone hearing about what you've done, you'd assume that your biggest risk would be actually when you're climbing up a wall, not when you're going out hiking on snowshoes.
Yeah, so one of the interesting things, though, with free soloing anyway, the times that I've had, you know, say near misses soloing, like say I break a hold or like something happens suddenly, the thing is by the time I even recognize what has happened, it's already done. You know, like I break a hold, the hold falls off, I manage to stay on the wall, and like that's it, it's done. And so, like, by the time you have that spike of adrenaline and, you know, you start to get all shaky and you get and you have that fear response, by the time the fear response happens, like, the situation is already resolved. You know, like, I didn't fall off. It's over. And so then you can just, like, take a deep breath, relax, and, like, carry on with what you're doing. I feel like to experience true, like, deep fear or, like, dread, you need, like, a longer, more drawn-out process. You have to have, like, a slow build-up where you're like, oh, no, I really don't want something to happen, oh, no, you know, and, like, have that slow burn. I read a really good Stephen King essay about that once, actually. Like, to write real horror, you have to, like, deeply care about the character, and you need that slower burn where you're, like, genuinely worried for their safety.
Do you ever have that, feeling of dread?
Yeah, for sure. And I've had that many times, well, several times with a rope on, because when I'm climbing with a rope, I'm more willing to push myself into uncomfortable territory. And so I've gotten into a few situations that way where I was like, this is suddenly very, very scary. And, you know, and it just keeps building where I'm like, now I've gone too far and I can't go back. And like, what am I going to do? I'm so screwed. It's like, you know, quite scary.
No, one thing that I find so fascinating about how you're describing this is, I mean, sort of how you deal with uncertainty, because, I mean, clearly uncertainty is partly what you crave. I mean, this is sort of the thing that drives you.
I mean, it's definition sort of adventure.
Yeah, it sort of gives you that electric jolt, but you don't want too much uncertainty, even though what you're doing is incredibly dangerous. I mean, you don't really want to get out of your comfort zone.
I would sort of take issue with incredibly dangerous. I would say incredibly high consequence, you know, meaning that if something goes wrong, I'll probably die. But the challenge is to make it feel safe. You know, I mean, I think that's kind of the appeal of the soloing that I'm doing, is to take something that seems crazy and to, like, make it feel totally normal.
You are probably most famous for your climbs in Yosemite, and you've done a bunch of first ascents. You've set various speed records there. What makes Yosemite such a climber's paradise?
Have you been to Yosemite?
I have not.
Oh, you are missing out. Yosemite is maybe one of the most beautiful places on Earth. It's just so inspiring. It's just like big, clean, sweeping walls. You know, it's awe-inspiring in like the actual definition of the word. Like, I mean, it really, the grandeur, I mean, it's just a real sense of awe. And then for rock climbing, it's just amazing because the rock is really good.
So I'm curious, does the rock feel alive to you?
No, the rock feels like rock. You know, it feels cold and hard. I'm like not very spiritual at all about the whole climbing thing. I mean, I love climbing, but, you know, I mean, it's just a bunch of rocks.
One of your most famous climbs was the Yosemite Triple you did with Tommy Caldwell, climbing El Cap, Half Dome, and the south face of Mount Watkins all in one day, which meant that you had to do a lot of that in total darkness.
Yep.
Can you describe that day?
I mean, it was a very long day. But yeah,
how long was it?
When Tommy and I did it, I think it was 22 hours almost, or 21:50, something like that.
Wow.
And then I actually went back later and soloed the triple. So I did sort of the same idea, but by myself, still using gear and a rope, but navigating the walls by myself. And that took me almost 19 hours, I think. I mean, they're both really big days.
Well, I mean, what you're describing is, I mean, you are climbing up thousands of feet of cliff, and then you got to hike down to climb the next one.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's 7,000 feet of vertical rock climbing, and then plus the hiking. I mean, just hiking back into Mount Watkins is like a several-hour walk, and then when you get to the top, you have to hike, you know, over an hour back to the road, and then you can drive for an hour to get back down into the valley floor, and then, you know, hiking off El Cap is like another hour. Hiking up to Half Dome is like 2 hours, and then hiking down from it's even more. You know, when you add it all up, it's like a lot of exercise.
Am I right that you climbed El Cap in total darkness, just with a headlamp?
Yeah, and actually we were super strategic about climbing things in the dark or in the shade, because had we climbed in the sun, we would have just gotten cooked. Basically, we chose the order that we climbed the walls in based on how we could avoid the sun. And actually, the vertical rock climbing in some ways is the best to do in the dark, because it's harder to get lost, because we already knew the route, so we knew where to go. And with a headlamp on, you can see the 6 or 8 feet in front of you just as well as you can in the daytime. Whereas if we were like hiking out to the base of one of the walls, so if you're like hiking through the forest at night, it's like much easier to get lost.
Isn't it really weird, though, to be up thousands of feet on a cliff, just being able to see 8 feet in front of you?
Actually, in some ways, it's less scary. I mean, because what people find scary on big walls is like the exposure, the big drop. And when you're doing it at night, it's like swimming in the ocean or something. It's just the infinite abyss around you. You can only see the 8 feet around you whenever you look. And so you feel like you exist inside this little bubble.
Now, you've also gone to some other parts of the world where the conditions are kind of brutal at times. Patagonia, for instance, in South America.
Yeah. As soon as you said brutal, I'm like, yep, Patagonia.
Tell me about that.
Patagonia is basically a bigger version of Yosemite. Bigger walls, more wild, more remote, big glaciers, and then, like you're saying, brutal wind, you know, really rugged weather conditions. But, you know, in a way, if you're trying to, like, up the adventure further, you know, like, if the walls in Yosemite are starting to feel too small, then it's like, well, you have to go to bigger mountains and you have to climb bigger walls. And so that leads you to places like Patagonia.
Do you like having to contend with a lot of wind and, you know, some of these other elements?
Honestly, I don't think any human enjoys the wind. Everyone feels like psychologically frayed in the wind. So I don't love the wind. But I do love being in, you know, the most beautiful places on Earth on these, like, amazing granite spires surrounded by beautiful glaciers and, like, the southern ice cap. It's all pretty picturesque. So, you know, I'm willing to deal with the wind to climb those walls.
Is the best part of you, for you, sort of the most pleasurable part of these climbs, is it during the climb or is it when you finished, when you've done it?
I think depending on the climb a little bit, I sort of get pleasure from both. I mean, definitely afterward, I'm always satisfied with, like, okay, I did something that I've dreamt of or I did something that I'm proud of. But oftentimes as I'm doing it, it's sort of like the best, like that feeling of perfection, that feeling that you're executing things perfectly. I mean, that's kind of one of the best things, I think.
Now, you are engaged in the ultimate existential sport. I mean, climbing, especially free soloing, is by definition, you know, facing death, and friends of yours who are climbers have died. Does that make your life more intense in some ways?
I don't know. I mean, if anything, I feel like it makes my life more mellow or, like, more relaxed because I'm just, like, so relaxed about everything that's not, you know, mortal peril. You know, like, if my life isn't on the line, then I'm just like, oh, it's, you know, I'm pretty relaxed. Like, no problem, no worries. I mean, I'm a pretty casual person.
And how old are you now?
I'm 30.
Wow.
Yeah, I turned 30 this year. It makes me feel really old.
Alex Honnold is one of the world's great rock climbers and author of Alone on the Wall. Steve Paulson talked with him.